Hello, I'm Jess Stockford. I lead the governance practice at Prospectus, a recruiter and executive search agency in the not-for-profit sector. We work to build diverse and inclusive boards and leadership teams. I'm delighted to introduce episode 18 of the Prospectus podcast series.
So it's my great pleasure to introduce Patrick Dunn. Patrick is many great things. He's highly in demand as a board consultant, as an experienced non-exec director in the beyond profit space, a chair, a writer, and a serial social entrepreneur. And Prospectus have been very, very lucky to collaborate with Patrick on a number of occasions. And I'm delighted that we're here, albeit in these little boxes called Zoom, to speak to Patrick today about his book, Boards, which for me has become a really essential guide to navigating the human complexity of governance. So Patrick, your excellent book, Boards, was published in late 2019, just before COVID struck. Could you tell us a bit about the journey that the book has taken since then?
Yeah, sure. And it's a great pleasure to join you, Jess, as always. Well, the book was published literally weeks before COVID struck, and I had this big, you know, schedule of dinners and breakfasts and lunches. And actually, we did manage to get one in for some Prospectus people. But then I spent a while sort of unpicking all of that because we couldn't do any of that. And then suddenly the sort of Zoom webinar kind of market opened up, and then I was sort of rushed off my feet for a while doing sessions like that, which was good. But I was conscious sort of reasonably swiftly that actually, you know, the book was, it had pretty nice reviews and won the award and so on. But I thought actually, you know, now COVID struck, the world's changed a little bit for boards. And so it's already damn well out of date before we started. So I started to think very early on about, you know, well, when it becomes clear when we might be getting through this, of doing a second edition. And so the second edition came out fairly recently, and that's been updated for COVID, which has been good. What I thought was interesting is actually the people who've been sort of interested have not just been board members, they've been lots of CEOs. As one CEO put it to me, you know, I got this so I can work out how to manage my board. And I know in the sector, you know, if you get a group of CEOs together, you know, it can occasionally become a bit of a kind of board bashing kind of festival, for want of a better expression. So, and there've been some things which have resonated very strongly. And I know we're going to cover those in the book as themes, which will continue well into 22, I'm sure.
Thanks, Patrick. Thank you. And I'm so pleased that it's had its it already having another kind of evolution of its existence, which is great. Really, really brilliant to hear that. The first and original edition of Boards triangulates governance as this trio of thematics: people, purpose, and process. And it also sets out a brilliant selection of dilemmas that illustrate the gearing of these thematics, which I think are really animate governance in practice, behavioural governance too. Most organisations, all organisations, are experiencing the aftershocks of COVID. How would you say that those thematics and the gearing of those thematics play out now? And could you give me an example of a new dilemma that you think is common to a post-COVID governance context?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I'm a mathematician by background and I'm mildly dyslexic, so I love symbols rather than lots of words, which is odd when you've written the book. And the other symbol, which I think goes with this, is the Venn diagram, which you know, if you think of one circle being the board, the other as the management, and in the middle is the intersection. And I think what's been fascinating through COVID is that intersection obviously bulged as, you know, the more oversight and more support was required for boards. And that influenced sort of where decisions get made. The other thing which played into that was the whole nature of decisions and the whole nature of how long are we making this decision for. And so a tangible example would be, you know, which a lot of people have had in December and then revisited at the end of December, is the budget for 22. We kind of, the big dilemma is, you know, do we move properly to dynamic budgeting, or do we stick with a kind of traditional approach? And, you know, if you talking to some other charity chairs this week about the current situation, you know, we were just getting some of the momentum back into some of the activities which depended on physical interactions, you know, some of the fundraising stuff and so on. You know, what are we going to do now? And because we don't know really how long this Omicron variant will last, and then, you know, there may well be another one after that. So kind of that whole big dilemma, I think, around how do we make decisions is probably one of the most tangible impacts of COVID. Some of those impacts were those trends were happening before, and it's just been an acceleration. But I think the dealing with uncertainty dilemma, if you can call it that, is probably one of the most fundamentally challenging things, but not just for the social sector, but for business, for government, for other organisations.
Yeah, it's absolutely the way that we live our lives at the moment, isn't it? We are having to be hyper, you know, elastic in our thinking, in our hopes and aspirations all the time.
Hyper elastic is a great expression.
It's yours. And I know that you spend a lot of time, Patrick, on the road. I know you do quite a lot of travelling in your car at the moment. And I know that you've had, as part of this, you know, you've got all this wonderful time to think. And you talked to me about this really interesting idea of decision making and strategic planning, moving from the idea of a map, detailed, fixed, to being a sort of sat-nav operating system, which is updating constantly, responding to environment, new information and so on. Can you tell us a bit more about this? I love the idea of it.
Yeah, and just for those of you that are concerned about the environment, in terms of my driving, it's actually to see some quite sick relatives at the moment, so that's why I'm spending a lot of time in my car. But the idea is that, you know, in the maps world, we had a map. You know, it's pretty reliable. We knew where we wanted to get to, and we could follow a number of routes to get there. But the map didn't really take account of changing conditions, you know, either weather, traffic, anything. And with the rise of big data, particularly the rise of big data analytics, I think, and the rise of uncertainty, there are a number of drivers pushing us to think, well, let's make the decision when we're closer to the junction. Now, that could be an excuse for prevarication. It could be an excuse for not deciding. So the thing which goes with this, I think, is a sort of, you know, if it's in relation to the strategy, you've got a strategic framework, you've got some strategic parameters, but what you also have is some flexibility about the exact route you're going to get there and what you're going to do at each stage. In the budgeting sense, of course, you're going to have a sort of annual budget that comes out of it, which is your most likely outcome type budget, as opposed to a fixed one. And a good example of this, I think, was from the business sector, which was Zoom. So, you know, Zoom had a budget. It planned to spend a certain amount in, you know, January, February, March, April, May. But when COVID struck, you know, it decided, actually, this is such a great opportunity, but we don't know how long this is going to last. So actually, we need to invest in a measured way, so we don't, you know, bet the whole company on it. But actually, this is a major opportunity to grow. And what was interesting with the dynamic budgeting and sat-nav approach, I think, to life, is it's as much useful on the upside as it is on managing the downside. I think we've all been used to, in charities, to the sort of lockstep spending approach. You know, we will only spend for the, you know, we know what forward grant income we've got. We're always cautious about the level of reserves and the rest of it. But I think this combination of deciding when you're nearer the junction is probably the best way to say it, with the latest information that you have at that time, but you know where you want to get to, and you know where you don't want to get to, and you've got a framework for all of this. But I think it's a healthier mindset rather than constantly under or overachieving budget.
It completely tunes back in, doesn't it, to this issue of how we make decisions at the moment, how leadership works, and how, you know, through a leadership and governance lens, and in our you know, everyday lives too, we're doing that. We're having to go up to the wire, aren't we, with our we're having this conversation about a week before Christmas, and I know all of us are having all sorts of thoughts about whether we're able to escape contracting COVID, or, you know, see family or not. You know, we are getting very close to the junction. Yes, it feels very current.
The other thing which I might say, which links to this, is actually one of the, I did a LinkedIn article last week called "How Data Savvy Is Your Board?" And it's not just to satisfy my inner mathematical needs. I've just been observing that because of the rise of big data and more live information and more data being available more generally, I think it's really incumbent on boards to have the kind of wherewithal to really understand the data that's being presented to you, and to be able to challenge that in a constructive way. And I just wonder that there were a few sort of occasions where I just wondered whether that was really present in the board as a whole. And I think this might influence, you know, the sorts of board members we have. And also, I think I'm talking to a number of people now as a result of doing this who are interested in doing booster sessions with boards on you know, being more data savvy, because not everyone, you know, you want diversity on a board, and not, you know, you don't want a board full of, you know, mathematically oriented people. You want a broad mix, but data is becoming more and more significant, I think it's always been significant, but I think the ability to sort of see through what's being presented is quite important.
And Patrick, in your role as a consultant to boards, how would you advise non-exec boards and management teams to use the right data in the right way as an effective governance tool?
Yeah, so my starting point would be, you know, that discussion we have, which is, you know, what are the big decisions we need to take in the coming spell? When are we going to take them? How are we going to take them? Who are we going to get involved in making those decisions? Also needs to include within the what information do we need to make this decision, what data are we going to need? Because otherwise you end up in a situation where, you know, a week before you make the decision, in the traditional way, you get a paper and it's got some data in it, but you think, oh, there's no data on this or that. I think it'd be really interesting to have that. Well, if you'd had that discussion a few months earlier, you might have had that data there, and that might have enlightened or informed the decision in a better way. So that's my starting point, is to think about the information that you want. And then, you know, I think there's a couple of really good books which I usually recommend. One is The Art of Statistics by David Spiegelhalter. David, as you know, most people in the UK will know, is a sort of very good communicator of data, and he's been a fantastic asset through the whole of COVID. But his book just sets out, you know, the basics of understanding the difference between causation and correlation and significance, and, you know, and actually what data sets are really all about. So I think that's a good, very accessible, really interesting book. The other one, which I think is really interesting, is David Hand from Imperial, his book called Dark Data. And that's about, you know, more or less, how come we don't use a load of data that we've got in front of us? So I think IBM say that, you know, most organizations only use 10% of the data that they've got. And sometimes there's some really useful information there that would have helped inform the decision. But in the quest for brevity, in the quest for being concise, it's just not included. But it could have been very, very helpful. And it's full of loads of examples. But that's a really useful book around how to be how to be more aware, and actually, but again, the more you think ahead of what might be useful information to have to make that decision, the better it will be. And then my final book recommendation around in that world is probably the most well-known one, which is Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, which is all around how we make decisions and managing bias, because you know every bit of information that presented to you is biased in some way, and you should expect your management teams to want to present the strongest argument that they possibly can, which means they leave out bits that aren't going to help that argument.
Yeah.
So you know, as a board member, you need to sort of be alive to that. It's not a bad thing that they do that, but you just need to know that's the real world and poke around and try and find those things that might be missing.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for that reading list as well, which we will annotate this. And your recommendations are always great. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. As a recruiter of non-executive boards, we at Prospectus have observed the way, and you've referred to a little bit earlier on about huge, you know, social change. We've observed the way in which many boards have responded from a needs and values basis, not only to COVID, but some of the major kind of global social and rights-based issues that we're living through, notably as a result of the murder of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, and the Me Too movement, and the climate emergency too. Power structures and systems are being challenged in a completely different way. We know that organisations and their staff bodies are much more engaged and an activist in their approach than ever before. Social media is an increasingly powerful lens on leadership and governance too. How do you encounter this, Patrick? And how do you think boards should be navigating it? Who do you think decides and how?
So, in terms of the positive side of this, I think although a lot of this comes from a dark place, it's very healthy to get it out there, and it's very healthy to be now in a stage where we're doing something about it. You know, whether that's climate, whether that's racial equality, you know, we're still not even talking about disability really as a major inequality. You know, I did another article about, you know, the blind spot on disability. How many disabled people are there on boards outside of the social sector? Hardly any. It's awful. We should change that. But my positive feelings are that there's two areas where I think there's really good hope and good practical ways that boards can change the game on some of this stuff. One is around how they think about culture. And the other is the use of next gen boards. So in terms of culture, I mean, I've always said in my rather sort of simplistic way that a board should know what culture it's got in the organization. It should know what culture it wants. And if they're different in any way, it should have some idea of how it's going to get from what it's got to what it wants. Now, one of the exciting things, I think, is there are now much better tools available to try and understand what culture you've really got beyond the traditional staff engagement survey, which, you know, is not always the most reliable tool you can have, particularly if you do it just before bonus and salary review times and all the rest of it. So I think some of the metrics available, and one of the things that was really interesting through COVID was the work done by MIT, Sloan and Glassdoor as a partnership. And what they looked at was 1.5 million employees in 500 major global organizations. And what they looked at was, how are those employees rating the culture of the organization through time? And they've been doing this for a few years before COVID. So they were able to look at, and one of the most interesting things was that on average, and this was taken from social media commentary that employees would make, so it's probably biased negative rather than positive in that sense, but they found there was a 25% uplift in how highly employees valued those organisations as they went through COVID. And the three things that they picked out which really led to that, which drove those increases, were the quality of communications, the focus on well-being, not a great surprise, and agility. The companies that had more open-minded leadership and people in the organization who were prepared to change, not panic, but change kind of swiftly and thoughtfully, and involved people, because communication isn't just a one-way thing, seemed to outperform by a long way their peers. On the next gen boards, I think one of the things that can lead to challenges in organizations is where the board is a very, very, very different demographic to most of the organization and its customer base. That's always been a challenge. And so, one of my favorite examples around this is Gucci, which is a sort of business rather than a social sector organization. But they decided a number of years ago that the board was sort of reasonably senior, very, very heavyweight, good people, but they were worried about the future and would they be connecting with, future customers. So they set up a next gen board, and that next gen board helped them to provoked and prodded them into getting a digital strategy before their main competitors. Mm-hmm. They got the right digital strategy and they way outperformed their competitors. If I think of the EY Foundation, which I chair, I'd say, a major reason why we've managed to achieve the degree of impact we have in the 7 years since we were formed has been our youth advisory board and its predecessor, the youth panel. And that youth advisory board, the chair and the vice chair sit on the main board. And the expression that I've always had for this is that, I really want young people to be at the head of the organization as well as the heart. In most youth sector organizations, young people are at the heart, but actually having them at the head, telling you what, around the board table, informing decisions, making decisions, they are probably, we have one on each committee and all that kind of thing. And the contribution of the young lady who's been on our nominations committee has just been inspirational and outstanding. She's the shrewdest of all of us in terms of when we have interviews, we all want to know what Laura thinks. She's just fantastically good instincts. I think boards being kind of more proactive on culture, understanding that you can't microwave it, so you can only influence it during the time you're there, getting the metrics in place, which you probably already got in the cupboard somewhere, in the digital cupboard somewhere, and then really, being bold and brave around having a next gen board. It's not easy. It's not always smooth. It's like a lot of things to do with diversity. If you want a more diverse group, you're not going to agree as quickly. But you're going to have more difference. But that's what you want, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Patrick. You always provide this really interesting balance of great kind of resources and also great thinking, but also some really great practical insights as well that people can kind of pick up and run with. My final question to you is, as someone who works alongside you in a world of board consultancy, which can be a lengthy and resource intense process for boards, but hugely important and hugely valuable. What would you say are the most kind of stickable approaches and techniques that might ensure a really sustainable and continual self-appraisal of culture, of performance, of relevance for boards and those who work with them?
Yeah, so I'd go back to my little triangle of purpose, people and process. So, I'm working with the board at the moment, and it kind of, first conversation, everyone singing off the same hymn sheet, they all agree on the purpose. But when you reflect more, what you learn is actually that purpose isn't really quite as relevant as it was and it's getting less relevant quite quickly. So they're all following this purpose, which needs to be adapted. So, and part of that is getting a prod, getting a thought provocation. And I think reflection is a much underrated thing to do. So in the pie chart of your time each week, I think if you're a chair, you know, I live near Richmond Park and I walk around there endlessly. And, I, you know, that's a great place of reflection for me. And, you know, thinking about, you know, that meeting, you know, I think just sometimes it's at that level of, you know, I'm not sure, you know, X was as comfortable as they normally are. I wonder why that was. I better give them a ring, kind of thing. Or actually, you know, I've picked up something from a completely different place. So I find this a lot in Africa. You know, you pick up some amazingly creative ideas there. And you think, well, you know, how will that be relevant to another, you know, I don't know, global organization I might be working with? And it so often is. It's sort of, and equally the other way around. You think, you know, how could something from a big global organization be relevant to that tiny little startup I'm working on at the moment? And you can make these connections. So the second thing I'd say is, you know, you need to keep your antennae really alive. And the best way to do that is be curious, get out and about, find out what other boards are doing. So I do spend, you know, a decent amount of my time talking to other chairs and CEOs to find out what they're up to. So the moment COVID broke properly, I was on the phone talking about, you know, what do you think of this? What are you doing? What? And together, you know, we found our way to sort of get through that first horrible phase. But I don't think I could have done that without the wisdom of my friends and peers.
It's really interesting, isn't it, Patrick? Sometimes it feels counterintuitive to do that, to look outside rather than to focus on the kind of, you know, the internal. But I think it is, it's so important. And certainly all of the leadership sessions that we've run in the past 18 months where we've brought chief execs or chairs together have been a testament to that. Patrick, thank you so much for your time today. I feel, and I'm going back to the motoring and the map reading metaphor, I feel like you might have written the Haynes manual for governance. That's what might have happened. But also, it's a manual that is filled with humanity as well, with bravery, with reflection, with a balance of head and heart, and recognizing culture and hope, and you know, investing in the next generation who will be the people delivering our society, our economy into the future. But thank you so much. And we can't recommend boards enough. So thanks so much for your time. Thank you, Patrick.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.